Well, I'm going to talk about the global asbestos struggle. And I hope that I can show you a video too at some point. This is an example of a man sawing a sheet of asbestos cement roofing. You see this corrugated roofing all over the developing world. And it's not a very good picture, but on his head you can see his hair is white from the dust from sawing that stuff. And the scraps are laying around, the children are walking around, the exposures are everywhere. This is in Pakistan, not that long ago. This is a picture that was taken some time ago outside of a plant where asbestos cement pipes like the ones in the background were made, and the fragments of the pipes and sheets can be seen where this little child was playing. The same thing still goes on. We have recently received pictures from Indonesia where Korean and Japanese activists are working with people in Indonesia to raise awareness about problems there. A Korean company went to Indonesia, and they have all this waste that they dump all over the place. The waste sacks of asbestos are used. There are pictures of workers stuffing waste fragments of asbestos into the sacks to reuse as some kind of construction material with substantial exposure. So this is an old picture maybe, but it still goes on. About the only thing that's probably changed is the ownership of the plant. At the time this picture was taken, it was a subsidiary of a Johns Manville Corporation, asbestos-based company in the United States, in Ahmedabad, India. Now, there are no longer any multinational asbestos companies in the world, and the industries that exist today are national companies in India, Brazil, and the other countries. They are what I call local chapters of the asbestos mafia. This is fragments of asbestos cement that were used by a worker or someone around in the neighborhood, waste fragments of asbestos cement sheets and pipes to construct a dwelling. Today, the consensus is that this stuff should be banned. The World Health Organization finally came out with a call for a global ban in 2006, same with the ILO. The World Bank published environmental health standards in 2007 with a strong paragraph about how asbestos shouldn't be used in new construction and how internationally recognized safeguards should be used in disturbing any asbestos-containing material in renovations of existing construction. And then the World Bank published a guidance note for its project officers with more detailed information on that in 2009. Over 50 countries have banned asbestos. Ecuador, a couple weeks ago, the Ministry of Health announced they're going to issue a decree banning asbestos. There are, as I said, no global asbestos corporations left. There are global firms that have no asbestos policies, ICI, Dow, Unilever, companies that have operations all over the world and have international global policies of avoiding asbestos in new construction and being very careful about renovations when they disturb existing facilities with renovations in the construction. So I have unsuccessfully asked these companies to provide copies of their global no asbestos policies. They don't share that. Canada is a crucial country. The asbestos exporting countries, the asbestos mining countries, are in order of size: Russia, Kazakhstan, Brazil, Canada, Zimbabwe, and Colombia. And 10 years ago, Canada was the world's leading asbestos exporting country. The amount of asbestos mined in Canada has gone down considerably since then, but they still are a major exporter. This has been the subject of tremendous internal struggles in Canada. The Canadian Broadcasting Company did a great documentary in June of 2009. Showing the conditions in an Indian asbestos factory where asbestos from Canada was being used. Around that time, also last year, these women who call themselves the Raging Grannies. They'd show up in little old lady outfits, carrying posters and handing out leaflets. They're radicals, in this case, protesting the export of asbestos by Canada at the meeting of the leader of the Liberal Party, who would quite likely be the next prime minister if Canada had, next time Canada has a national election. And this guy had just given some kind of a answer about human rights question, and the last question was from one of these ladies saying, well, what are we doing exporting asbestos to the poor countries of the world when we're spending millions of dollars to carefully remove it from the buildings where you parliamentarians work? And he agreed. He said, I'm probably stepping off a cliff here, but I agree we shouldn't be exporting this stuff to other countries if we don't want to use it ourselves. And he has maintained that policy, and by taking that position at that time, that scared off Chinese investors who were thinking of spending $30 million to buy Canadian asbestos mines to continue supplying their asbestos factories. So that story's not over, but the good guys won one round. The Quebec premier went on a trade trip to India after that, and this became the focus of protests in India. Activists and asbestos victims demanded to meet with the premier. That's like the governor of the province. And he wasn't going over there to sell asbestos. It was other industries he was signing trade agreements about. But again, tremendous amount of publicity came back to Quebec about that. Meanwhile, the Canadian Cancer Society, the Canadian Medical Association, Canadian Public Health Association have all publicly called for Canada to get out of the asbestos business, shut down the mines, provide just transition for the remaining several hundred miners. There's only one mine left operating. And we thought we were on our way. Maybe Canada would be shutting down asbestos. And then the Quebec premier comes up with this idea of putting $58 million in as a loan guarantee to reopen the old Johns Manville mine in Asbestos, Quebec. And this is still a very live issue. This was immediately followed, the announcement that they were thinking of putting this public funding into reopening this mine was followed by demonstrations all over the world at Quebec and Canadian offices. Then Environmental Health Perspectives had an issue on asbestos July last of this year. Had a strong editorial by Linda Birnbaum, head of NIEHS, had an article by 16 of us about the Collegium Ramazzini's call for a global ban on asbestos being renewed. And this got a lot of publicity across Canada. And then the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists issued a barrage of reports from about 9 months of research. They had journalists in a lot of countries. You see Mexico, Russia, India, Brazil, China. They had journalists on the ground bringing back reports. And so this, again, got tremendous publicity in Canada. And this kind of kept things kept that loan guarantee from going through. But the Quebec premier then acknowledged that there would be conditions for the mine financing. The conditions would be that it's an economically sound investment and that the countries and companies that use the exported asbestos from Canada are going to behave in a responsible way. Just how they were going to assure that was left to the imagination. This is still, meanwhile, the town of Asbestos, in protest of the American Canadian Cancer Society's position on asbestos, withdrew from a fundraising relay called the Relay for Life that was a regular feature that was used to raise funds for cancer research. So these idiots got more publicity for doing that in the town of Asbestos. And then now unnamed Indian investors are now coming up with $15 million to finance this Johns Manville mine reopening. And next week we're going to have an advertisement in the newspaper in Ottawa targeting the Prime Minister Harper, the national leader in Canada, with a toe tag on a corpse with the sign on the toe tag saying "killed by Canadian asbestos," and this will be signed by scientists and international public health people from all over the world. So the battle goes on, but I'm afraid they may go ahead with that $58 million deal. Whoops, I went the wrong way. The Canadian government has been very instrumental in promoting asbestos. You see the flag of Canada prominently displayed in the middle bottom. This was at a symposium put on in 2006 in Jakarta, and this was to promote asbestos. The head of occupational health for Indonesia was opposed to the use of asbestos, and she got in touch with us about this being organized, and then she tried to get involved in setting this meeting up. A leading expert on asbestos from Australia agreed to participate, but he was shut out, and so was the head of occupational health for the country. The whole thing was a farce, and the Canadian government was even hosting a cocktail after this meeting to make sure everybody got the industry line. Asbestos activism, meanwhile, especially with the internet, has been extraordinary. I think what we've been able to do with asbestos is a good example for perhaps a lot of other things. Starting about 10 years ago, there were major meetings in Osasco in Brazil. Activists got together. A considerable amount of the funds were donated by lawyers in the United States who've become quite wealthy, representing asbestos victims in damage suits, and who were kind enough to contribute money so we could bring people in from about 32 countries to this conference. And we've held similar conferences over the years, bringing in together doctors and lawyers and politicians and journalists and asbestos victims and union leaders and other people who want to work together to do something about these problems. And the activists in Japan succeeded in getting a ban in 2004 and South Korea in 2008. South Koreans have been extremely good about investigating imports of products containing asbestos to enforce their ban, and they've picked up things like asbestos-contaminated talc coming in from China and other asbestos products. And so you need to enforce these kinds of bans by looking at what you're importing as well as just publishing a ban. An Indonesian group has now been formed this year with strong help from the Japanese and Korean activists and others in Asia. The Asbestos Diseases Awareness Organization links activists using social networking. You'll hear more about that. And activists in Russia are even challenging the asbestos industry, which I think takes a lot of nerve. Based on my own limited experience with representatives of the Russian asbestos industry. The industry's reaction has been basically their profits come from the savings on prevention and compensation. And so this is an industry that understands the need to develop close relationships with governments so that they won't have problems with regulation, so that they won't have to pay compensation to the people that develop asbestos disease. And so we see in India, especially you've got people who are members of parliament who have financial interests in asbestos. You've got asbestos family, asbestos interests owned by families that also own media interests. And so it's very difficult to confront them. And the use of asbestos in India has been going up, doubling every 6 or 8 years. India and China first lead the world in asbestos use, and the use of asbestos is going up dramatically in both of those countries. The advertorials I mentioned in the Times of India, where they say that the asbestos they use is the white asbestos, it's perfectly safe. Doctors have been threatened for having published articles in medical journals about how that's not true in India. Politicians, I talked about the conflict of interest. And there was a government study that was started in India secretly with the involvement of the asbestos industry. And the study protocols were even kept secret for a long time. Meanwhile, contributions are being made to the literature on asbestos by financially interested parties in the United States that are defending cases involving asbestos. From Brakes, used chrysotile asbestos, which accounted for 95% of all the asbestos ever used in the world. and companies want to publish stuff in the literature to suggest that brake repair work doesn't really cause asbestos disease, especially mesothelioma. And so they've hired the best scientists money can buy and spent $36 or $7 million on these guys between 2001 and 2008 on Exponent and ChemRisk are the names of the consulting firms to publish what are called, what David Michaels calls product defense articles try and avoid liability in these cases. And then the asbestos industry, as it still exists, has published articles on biopersistence to argue that since not a lot of the chrysotile is gone from the lungs years later after the exposures, then it must have been something else that caused people to get cancer of the lung and mesothelioma from working with chrysotile. So these kinds of things continue to be published. They claim that the asbestos substitutes are dangerous or unstudied, but in fact the substitutes used in fiber cement, which is 90% of all the asbestos used in the world today, is in fiber cement pipes and sheets. So the alternative fibers that are used are cellulose fibers, polyvinyl alcohol, and polypropylene, and maybe acrylic fibers. All of these fibers are too large to be breathed deep into the lungs. So they're non-respirable, and so we have a lot less cause for concern about these substitutes, even though the industry waves this around that the substitutes haven't been studied as much as asbestos. Better the devil you know than some substitute for it. And they accuse people like us of working for the competitive industries, people whose entire lives have been spent in public health are portrayed by the asbestos industry as people who are secretly representing other companies that are making competitive products. And some of those companies, I have to admit, are some of my new friends. They are companies that made asbestos products in the past, have reformed for various reasons, and are making non-asbest, like the Saint-Gobain in Brazil is making polypropylene and cellulose-based fiber cement. And they now want asbestos banned in Brazil. They are my new friends. They don't want to compensate any of the people they hurt with asbestos all those years, but they do want to ban asbestos in Brazil. And so we have this kind of a limited sharing of interest with some of our former adversaries from the asbestos industry. Same in South Africa. The company Everite has been important in bringing about the ban on asbestos in South Africa after they stopped mining asbestos and using it in their own products. And they've also been helpful, I think, even in getting the ban on asbestos in neighboring Mozambique. And last is the asbestos industry is still holding conferences in places even like Havana. I think this is because of Cuba's longstanding close relationship with Russia last month, the place where the asbestos industry got together to talk about how they were going to keep selling asbestos, notwithstanding all of our concerns. So that's the state of play. The use of asbestos, global use, as you've seen, is pretty well level since the turn of the century at about 2 million metric tons. The previous slides didn't show that the global peak did go up as high as 5 million in 1975, but still we haven't been able to make much progress since the 1990s in terms of global consumption of asbestos total. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. I'm Dr. Kong, and this is Sukyun Lee. And yeah, actually, not me. She is the one involved. She has been involved the ban asbestosis in Korea and in Asia, and mainly, the organizing the victims in the local area. So at first, she will explain in Korean and English, the mixed. And then if when it's needed, I will add some translation.
Nice to meet you. I'm Seokyeon Lee. 제가 그 한국에서 성매매 피해자분들을 처음 만난 게 2008년도 2월이었습니다.
It was 2008. She first met the victims of asbestos.
처음 성매매 피해자분들을 만났을 때에 벌써 그 성매매 피해자 모임을 하고 있었던 거였고요. 그리고 제가 그분들을 만나기 시점에는 그 보상의 문제와 그리고 성면 정책의 문제에 대해서 문제 제기를 하고 있는 중에 제가 만났습니다.
When she joined the when she met the victims, there was already some kind of organizing victims groups. And at 2008, the victim groups you know, they were raising the issue about the compensation and
보상이란 뭐였지? 보상이랑
네, about the compensation, the limit of compensations.
그래서 뭐 어떤 점에서 좀 시너지를 일으켰는지, 그러니까 환경운동, 노동운동, 취업 피해자 이런 거에 대한 얘기 좀 간단히.
실제로 그 한국에서 성면 문제가 많이 알려지게 됐던 것은 2007년도에 그 소송 과정에서 악성 중피종 환자가 그 소송에서 이기게 되면서 그게 알려지게 됐고 그 과정에서 그 회사에 있었던 피해자들이 모이게 된 계기가 되었습니다.
그 회사 노동자가 모이게 네.
The background of those, you know, those organizing victim group was a lawsuit in 2007. One ex-worker of a factory got mesothelioma, but you know, company denied all the relationships, and so finally the worker won. From at the legal suit, and every other victims who kept silence, yeah, they feel, you know, oh, we can do it. So the silence was broken by the one victim, and then later, 1 year later, the victim groups raised various issues of themselves.
그렇게 해서 시작되었던 모임이 현재는 한 100명 이상의 피해자들이 모이고 있는 상황이고 그리고 현재 그 회사를 상대로 소송을 하고 있는 피해자만 해도 한 30명 정도가 되고 그거는 회사뿐만이 아니고 정부와 일본의 니치아스를 대상으로 소송을 지금 진행 중에 있습니다.
So now the victim groups is there are hundreds of victims joining the group, and among them about 30 workers raised lawsuit against the company to take the responsibility, and not only against the company but also to the government and NITIAS, the Japan group who owned before the Korean company before changed into the Korean company.
그 소송하는 사람, 그러니까 피해자 중에는 환경성 소송으로 있는 피해자분도 계시는데 그분은 아버님이 지금 사망했지만은 압성 중피종으로 사망했지만 환경성 피해자도 두 명이 포함되어 있습니다.
And among the victim groups, there are two environmental victims. It means the residents in local community. So the wife who lost her husband, and another is the son who lost his father from mesothelioma.
언니나 다른
현재 그 부산 지역에서는 성명 추방 네트워크를 만들어서 성명 피해자분들과 노동조합 그리고 저희 같은 그 노동안전보건단체들이 모여가지고 대응을 하고 있고, 이게 이제 서울에도 이렇게 한국 성명 추방 네트워크 방코가 만들어지게 되면서 함께 활동을 하고 있습니다.
Yeah, this is the end. Well, this the story is in Busan, the second biggest city in Korea. Yeah, and now, you know, adding to those victim group, some labor union activists and environmental groups and occupational safety and health group like her. Yeah. They all join together, and even some experts join together and make ban asbestos network in Busan. Yeah, and you know it covers the Busan area, and in Seoul, the capital of Korea, there is a national wide network together. So it means you know the first voice of a victim raised. Awareness of many victims, and then later solidarity from various aspects, and that was the factors.
One more, one more. 성과를 좀 이야기한다면은 2009년도에 성면 피해 구제법이 한국에서 만들어지게 됐고, 그게 내년에 시행이 될 예정으로 있고, 그리고 그 많은 성면에 대해서 많은 분들이 이게 문제라는 걸 알게 되면서 2009년부터는 전면적으로 성면을 금지하게 되고, 그리고 성면 노출 관련해서도 법이 많이 만들어지게 된 계기가 되었습니다. 땡큐.
성면 피해 구제법은 그러니까 피해 환경성 피해자까지 커버를
환경성 피해자를 커버하는 거죠.
Yeah. So the major achievement of this struggle, one of them is you know achieve to making a new law. And through the new law, the environmental victims can get compensation. Before that, the law, they have no way to live. Yeah. So that was a very important achievement. And then through the achievement, many people in Korea, they become to know the new fact that asbestos can affect not only workers, but also the community members. Yeah, thank you.
What an inspiring story. Thank you very much. Hi, Aubrey. Yeah, please.
Hi. So I just want to take this opportunity just to highlight two really important points about what we've been discussing. And this is based on a fairly long-winded experience that I've had working on the Libby, Montana site and continue to work on a number of issues. But one thing is that we found as we began to investigate the Libby, Montana site was an ongoing situation, as Barry and David Eagleman and others have seen, is this really kind of sophisticated effort by moneyed interests to ensure that they don't find asbestos in samples. And that there's a large effort or a large number of groups that can do analyses for asbestos on behalf of corporate America or others that will not find or not call anything asbestos. So with the Libby site, which was a vermiculite mine that was contaminated with asbestos, we would go up there and we were seeing all this asbestos disease, and we would have our samples analyzed by our labs, and it would come back, and you know, they would clearly indicate asbestos. The company would come back and say, there's no asbestos here. And they would fight us, you know, all the way through the courts, up to the case went up to the Supreme Court. But these issues of what is asbestos has really been an issue that's being gamed, and it's really a sophisticated game. So that's one piece of this pie. Now the other piece of this, and it goes back to actually a picture that you showed, Arthur, about the World Trade Center. And so Arthur showed the World Trade Center coming down and going up, and they actually switched away from spray on asbestos, they switched to a new product. They switched to a product called zonalite insulation. So that was actually a product that was made with vermiculite from the Libby mine that contained a lesser concentration of asbestos. So if you look at the U.S. kind of regulatory laws in terms of what amount that can be within a product, there's something that kind of says asbestos-containing material can have 1% or less. And that was the assumption that somehow 1% or less is safe. And when that was promulgated. But in fact, and that was a lot of our work and others, and OSHA even prior to the Libby mine, had realized that a 1% concentration of asbestos in a material has nothing to do with safety. It's irrelevant to safety, as a matter of fact. And we were able to go in and generate exposures. We would have concentrations that our scientists would measure at 0.001%, and we would disturb this material, and we'd get clouds of asbestos that would be over the OSHA stele in a few minutes. I mean, it just ridiculous exposures. As a matter of fact, there's a situation here in Colorado that we investigated, and this was a home that a person, actually he was about 17 years old, him and his father, had installed vermiculite attic insulation, less than 1%, in their home when he was 17. He developed mesothelioma at age about 58. They still had this home. We went back to this home in Colorado here, and the material's still up in their attic, and lo and behold, you just disturb it up a little bit, huge cloud of asbestos. The home was contaminated with it as well, and you continue to have this problem. Not only is this problem was in their home, but probably about 10 to 30 million homes is the estimate in the United States. So this is an issue not only in this vermiculite attic insulation, but in all sorts of our products. So there's an assumption of safety. We're calling things asbestos, but we need to be careful, you know, and to understand what it is you banned, which we applaud, absolutely, but we need to be careful about understanding what our laws say, and in terms of not having a fallacious ban in terms of something that the public now thinks is banned, which was unfortunately kind of an effort that happened in the U.S. Legislative branch a few years back, which they made some compromises, and the net effect would have been not to really make an effective ban. So I just wanted to raise our awareness a little bit on that issue. Thank you.
We have time for one more question. Thank you very much. I did a little calculation, and there's about 140 person years of effort just here at this table that's been put into this purpose, this cause. And now when we include our compañeros in Korea, there's so many person years that are required for this effort to ban asbestos. This presentation, as you'll note, is being recorded, and the videotape will be available on the ADAO website. So thank you very much for all of your attention. The speakers are available for as long as you want to keep them here, I think. And we really appreciate your attention.